Welcome to Garden Planet Gardeners. You're with Selena and Karen today, and we're going to talk all about bees.
And begonias.
Bees and begonias.
Yeah. So welcome, everyone. Yeah. Let's start with the plant of the week, shall we, Selena?
Okay, let's get straight into it.
Yeah. Begonias. Reason being, Selena and myself entered a begonia growing competition not so long ago.
Yes.
And with results, yes, we came runners-up.
Yep.
Silent clap in the background. So we're really proud about that. We took away a little prize and a lot of pride. So, yeah. So I thought, well, that would be a great way to introduce the topic of begonias.
Okay.
Apparently, they're a big deal in the gardening world. There are begonia societies out there nationwide, if you didn't already know.
Yes, there's actually one in Auckland called the Auckland Begonia Circle, and totally dedicated to begonias. So it has fan clubs, and they have meetings.
Yes.
And they have one actually coming up this June at the Auckland Botanic Gardens.
Oh.
So maybe get on their website and check it out, because, yeah, these are people that just absolutely adore begonias.
Well, the Auckland Begonia Circle.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. The begonia, it's an enormous group of flowering plants from tropical regions. And it is, there's three categories that I discovered from my research. You have your tuberous begonias, and that was what we grew in our begonia competition. Everyone was given two tuberous begonia bulbs to plant and foster. Then you have the rhizomatous begonias and the fibrous rooted begonias. The tuberous begonias, they are a large group of complex hybrids, and they're often identified by their prominent flowers, which can be single, double, ruffled, centred or multicoloured. The sure way to identify a tuberous begonia is to observe the roots, fleshy tubers, that are designed to store energy for the plant each winter while the plant lies dormant.
Okay, so they're dying down a bit now.
Yes. Have you kept your...
I have. They're not dead. Well,
mine are.
One survived. I actually planted it out in the garden and sort of under the eaves of the house, so it's a bit drier.
Yeah.
And actually, it's still going. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I did the same. It was probably in a more wet. It's alongside the fence, so it won't get too wet. It's not fully exposed, so we'll see. But I was told. And this was by one of the judges who actually judged that begonia competition. Jan is the only name I have at this stage. And she was contacted by my mother, who organised this competition. And she's from one of the, I think she's the Warkworth Garden Circle or something like that. So she knows a lot about gardening. And she said, yeah, just let them dry out a bit. Even let them leave the bulbs exposed, she said. Yeah, tip them on their side and just let them...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was interesting.
You mean tip them on their side out of the soil?
Yeah, that's what she said, and just leave them over the winter like that and then replant them come spring.
Kind of like...
Oh, when did we plant those? Sorry, summer.
Yeah, anyway, early summer. Mm. Would you say they're kind of like dahlias? They also have a tuber that you can lift and then you just keep them dry
over
the winter. I suppose because the winter in southern climates, there's not much moisture because it's all locked up by snow and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's, how they keep going.
But then if it's originated from the tropical regions, you'd think they'd be constantly have wet feet. And the other thing with the tubers, do they... like multiply in size, like as in, or is it just always that same tuber?
This is my first time growing tuberous begonias, so I have yet to observe what
happens. Well, let the listeners know what happens on that, maybe.
We'll keep an eye on them. Yeah.
We've actually also entered a freesia competition on that note, but I think we should definitely give the begonias another shot next summer.
Yeah.
Maybe with those original bulbs.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So that's the and then you've got the Rhiza martis begonias, and they have fleshy roots that creep across the surface of the soil called rhizomes, and then the fibrous-rooted begonias just have an ordinary root system. Okay, so that's the three categories. Now, a lot of gardeners think that tuberous begonias are delicate and hard to grow. So I did a bit of research on that. And, hey, look, Selena and I managed to grow them, so...
Be encouraged.
Exactly.
We complete
well, now, you can grow anything, Selena. I'm a little more challenged in the garden world than you, but, yeah. We managed to get something out of them. And this is what the New Zealand Gardener magazine recommended. They said opt for named varieties as they are superior to seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
And also they said, yeah, purchase from a specialised grower or contact your local begonia society, because they'll know all the good name tubers. So,
yeah,
that would be a sure way of doing it. I'm pretty sure my mum got her bulbs from, what's that online, is it? onlinebulbs.co.nz or something.
New Zealand Bulbs Direct or something
yeah.
like that.
It's like the major bulb player in
And
it's got a huge variety in it. I don't know, I've heard some of the bulbs are questionable. They don't, it's not guaranteed. Some of the ladies in the circle were saying, you know, mine were dud.
Mm.
So I don't know, I think in future I'd plant more than two and maybe get a few different varieties, maybe even try a few different growers.
Well, the one that's in my garden actually didn't flower this season, so maybe it'll produce more next. And the one that did flower, the red one that won the third prize, I don't know what's happening with that one.
Yeah.
It doesn't show any.
Well, that brings me up to another point in my research, Selena.
Yeah.
Now, begonias are monoecious. I hope I'm saying that right. Having male and female flowers on the same plant. Some of the ladies in that garden circle were saying this can affect the quality of your flower. Because, of course, the judges were looking at the flowers.
Yeah.
Okay. They said each double male flower has two single female flowers, one on each side of the double blossom. So it's, what do we call that in the animal kingdom? It's like the hermaphrodites.
Oh,
they've
okay.
They've got both sexes on the plant.
Yeah.
So they said... I remember one of the ladies saying, try nipping one of the flowers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that sounds... But I'm very cautious about nipping plants because you've got to know exactly where and what you're nipping. So this is what New Zealand Gardener says. Remove the smaller flowers. They say it's similar to disbudding chrysanthemums. I don't know if you've done that before. And this prevents seed formation and directs more energy to enlarging the remaining double male flower. Do this as early as possible when the flowers are still in the bud stage using a sharp pair of pointed scissors. So they're very specific about that. And they said, but even if you don't bother with the disbudding process, that's okay, they'll still flower for months.
Are they saying that the female flowers are smaller than the male ones?
Mm.
Oh, I haven't really noticed because mine didn't produce lots and lots of blooms, so I wasn't really looking.
I noticed that more on one of the bulbs than the others. They both produced flowers, but one of them minimal. And I wondered if maybe if I'd looked at it a little more closely for those smaller single flowers and maybe nipped them, I might have had better results. But, yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. And what else did they suggest? Oh, this was an interesting one. A shaded spot is best for later in the season, as in full sun you can burn both the foliage and flower. So they suggest if you've got tinted corrugated polycarbonate roofing. We've got that. It's, you know, that, what do you call it, grooved.
Yeah.
That makes for an excellent shaded environment.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So they like indirect sun.
Yeah. And actually that's where I grew mine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I did move mine from the north side to the south side of the house because I thought, I saw that that was getting a bit scorched. I'm like, I'm making a mistake.
Yeah.
Poor begonia.
Yeah. And obviously it was the right thing to do, Selena, so that was cool. And the other thing that New Zealand gardeners suggest for tuberous begonias is use a good seed raising mix and mix in about 50% of a coarse substance like sand or pumice.
And I also heard a tip, don't use any that has peat because that they don't like too much moisture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said this is important as it doesn't pay to get the tubers too wet.
And talking about begonias, Karen, so you were talking about tuberous ones and rhizomatous ones, but there are the annual...
Good listening, Selena.
The annual type ones that we've used in bedding displays when I was contracting gardening.
Yes.
And they're the wax begonias.
Oh, that was the last category. They also known as fibrous-rooted begonias, like I guess just your standard.
Just normal root.
So, it's three different types of root, basically, And they refer these as the wax leaf begonia type.
Yeah. So I've got one of them as well, but they come in, some have purpley, burgundy-ish leaves.
Oh, okay.
And some have green leaves. The green ones have a red flower, and the burgundy-ish ones have a white flower. So there's quite a contrast.
Oh, nice.
And full road bedding displays, if they're all planted together, you can make patterns.
Yes, you see them on roundabouts quite a lot, don't
and
you?
They're very tough plants, and they last in flower for ages and ages and ages.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that makes begonias so special is what I've discovered, is the fact that they do flower really well. If they're happy, they just keep flowering.
Yeah.
And they said hanging baskets make for wonderful begonias, especially the tuberous, because the flowers seem to be quite spectacular.
They droop down.
Because they flower and they've got the part shade there and everything. So,
begonias. Now, we're going to go on to bees next.
Yeah. What did you find out about bees, Selena?
Well, there's so much to find out about bees.
Yeah.
Okay, the honeybee. Let's talk about that. New Zealand doesn't actually have any native honeybees. It's an introduced species.
Oh, okay.
Called Apis mellifera.
Yeah.
We have 28 species of different bees come into New Zealand, but there's only four native ones. And the native ones, they don't produce honey, so it's only the honeybee.
Oh, right. Because I was thinking, I was sure that we had some native bees, but you're specifically honeybees. No, okay.
Yeah. The honeybee, of course, produces honey. It's just really good for our really big export industry these days, the Manuka honey.
Yes.
But
let's not forget all the fruits and vegetables that require pollination.
Yeah.
Three quarters of the world's food requires pollination, apparently.
Yeah, so the first introduced bees came into New Zealand in 1837 by a lady called Mary Bumby, and I'm not quite sure if that's her real name. I mean, it's just... Mary Bumby.
Well, I mean, like, if Google said it was, then clearly, do not question.
All right, huh? She was a sister of a Christian missionary, and when they first came, they, of course, planted some gardens, and they needed fruit and vegetables, and they couldn't have them without them getting pollinated, so that's why they introduced the honeybees.
But I guess, like, they were wanting honey as well because the non-honey bees will still float from flower to flower, and there's other insects and birds do it too. And
so we still have pollinating insects, but I guess they really wanted honey, as honey was more used back in the days before sugar refining became
big. And honeybees are amazing pollinators. I mean, they get around, you know.
Yeah,
they're a good.
But the bumblebee is actually 50 times more active than honeybees. For really? Pollination purposes.
Oh, yeah. They're usually absolutely covered in it, aren't they?
Yeah.
In pollen.
So,
they're so cute.
And the thing about honeybees is they go into hibernation over winter because mm-hmm. they're making honey.
Uh-huh.
But the bumblebees, they're active year-round. So they're actually quite more valuable than the honeybee for our fruit and veggies year-round.
Okay.
And so the kiwi fruit and the tomato growers are really keen to have bumblebees do the work.
The bumblebees don't make honey?
Bumblebees don't make honey.
No. Okay.
So bumblebees
Because when you look at the hives, you never see bumblebees. You only see those little brown... looking,
uh-huh.
yeah, the breed that you first yeah. mentioned.
So
yeah.
they're a separate species, called Bumbus terrestris. So totally
oh,
different.
Is that why you thought maybe her name had some sort of connection or something? Because okay, interesting. Why not?
Yeah, so the bumblebees, they don't really have hives like the honeybees do.
Mm.
They just nest in the ground.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. After doing a little bit of research on bees myself, Selena, you know how you think of, like, I think of bees as being really cute, and especially bumblebees, you know,
yeah.
they're so fluffy and they're big
and
legs. And yeah.
yeah, yeah.
They seem quite friendly. And,
yeah.
But interestingly, a bee spends much of its life as a grub. This is what I just, in the midst of the hive where the queen bee resides.
Yeah.
And she's laying all the eggs. Well, the eggs, obviously, you know, everyone starts off as an egg. and then it turns into larvae.
Yeah.
And that spends quite a bit of time as larvae, and it sheds.
Yeah.
So it sheds multiple times, and then it turns into pupae, which is the final stage.
Yeah.
And then before it becomes a flying bee... And then it sheds again as pupae, and then it finally, you know, merges as a bee with legs and wings and everything. But a good chunk of its life, it's like a maggot,
little caterpillar,
pretty much,
but not, yeah,
with legless, just eating,
just a little blob,
yeah, a little blob. And you think, I don't think of bees in that sense because you never see it; they're tucked away.
Yeah, you know? They're flying around.
That's a significant. You know, part of their little lives. So,
like caterpillars turn into butterflies, right?
Yeah, and then I'm thinking more of the worker bees.
Mm.
Probably the drone bees. Actually, they don't even live that long. I think it's like a matter of weeks,
a few weeks, and they mate, and then they
and that's
die.
Yeah, they fertilize.
Yep.
Yeah, eggs, and then that's it. That done. Job done. And the queen bee, she lives for years.
Yeah. Karen, I'm
so
thinking about social justice when I think about bees. And, Leah, the males are the drones and they don't do any work.
No, pretty much. That's what I discovered.
They just wait to mate with the queen and then they die.
Well, here is your social justice, Selena. Get this. I discovered that some honeybee colonies will actually eject surviving drones during autumn months when it's cooler and there's less food.
Oh,
so,
okay.
What goes around comes around.
You're not keeping up your side of the hive.
Yeah, you're out. You're banished. You have no use.
Oh, yeah, I feel much better now.
So those worker bees, they're the female bees that are, what do you call it, not fertile. The queen bee's the only one that's fertile.
Yeah.
Reason being, did you discover this in your studies? Well, I think you left that to me, didn't you, in the end?
Yeah.
You're doing all that science and stuff, Karen. Is because the queen bee is fed and lives on royal jelly.
Ah, I see.
And the other bees don't. They don't get that privilege.
They got the special.
And that's those
food.
Fine, high-class nutrients that she's receiving make her fertile. And the other ones not.
Oh, I see. Oh,
isn't
no,
it?
I did.
I know.
That.
I just absolutely love this topic.
Yes, aside from making honey, the females also keep the hive clean.
Yes, and cool.
And they make this substance called propolis, which is like the wax.
Yes.
To keep the hive all in order. And it's lovely to see the honeycomb you know, the hexagonal comb things. It's just so orderly. And
I know. It's incredible. It is. It's like they're the perfect builders. They're such a fascinating creature. There are many fascinating creatures. But, yeah, the worker, you know, non-fertile female bees, they feed the larvae, they tend to the queen and the drones, they ventilate the hive, they defend the nest, and they basically perform any task required to preserve the survival of the colony. So they're the ones that have got the stingers, I believe.
Yes.
And when they sting someone, what happens is the stinger part gets stuck in whomever or whatever it is that's stung and literally rips their abdomen so badly that they're unable to survive thereafter.
So they kind of sacrifice for the health of the colony.
Yeah, incredible society. So how can we help these bees? So you did a bit of research on what we can do as a human species to help our declining bees.
Well, the reason why the honeybees are declining is because of the use of pesticides that not only harm the insects that are eating your plants, but the beneficial ones like bees.
Mm, mm.
And so that's one of the reasons why the bees are they're threatened.
Yeah.
And that's why we need to be looking after them and not using pesticides and sprays.
Yeah, chemicals that will...
Yeah.
Kill them.
Yeah, exactly. So gardeners, have a real good think before you use any of those.
Well, there was some tips, you know, that pamphlet I showed you about the bees, about if you do feel like you need to spray, and there's, you know, a lot of people out there that still do, and that's their choice, that it mentions something about spraying at certain times of the day.
Yes.
When the bees weren't active?
Yeah. During the evening.
Yeah. I think it mentioned not in the middle of the day when the bees are highly active and flying around and looking for pollen.
Yeah. And another way we can help bees is to grow more flowers.
Yes, absolutely. And flowers that bees love or prefer with lots of nectar and pollen.
So things like herbs, all the herbs, the lavender and rosemary, those kinds of...
Apparently bees love blue flowers.
Yes.
More than... Did you hear that?
Yeah,
that's something I learnt from... I went and had a... went to that... What's that place called? Kalmana
Gardens.
I had the... Anyway. Yes, here it was. Kalmana Gardens Harvest Festival, and I listened into a bee workshop by Carol Downer. Mm. She is a past president of the Auckland Bee Society. So she had a lot of really cool information. And she said that was one of them. She goes, they love blue flowers. So,
okay,
yeah.
Blue flowers, rosemary, borage, salvias.
Mm-hmm.
There's phacelia. That's another...
Oh, you can get blue and white phacelia, can't you?
Or pinkish, but the common one is blue.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that's what I said to her. I said to her, I'd love to have a hive in my backyard. I can see my fiancé rolling his eyes in the background going, oh, gosh, what's the next thing? But she said, no, forget the hives. We need more plants. Mm. Because she said beekeeping's becoming the new trend in the organic sort of society out there. Everyone, she said, but she's actually had to decline her number of hives because they're going hungry. They can't find enough...
Nectar.
So she said, if you want to help the bees, plants like you were just talking about, some of those herbs, and there's quite a number of natives that they like.
Natives and also trees that are friendly for bees. So flax is a really good one.
That was an interesting one. Good old flax.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Mm.
But, pohutukawas and all the native flowering ones. So anything that's got flowers with lots of pollen.
Yeah.
And what the bees really... like, aside from the blue flowers, is flowers that are sort of in clusters and open form, so they can easily land on them, like daisies.
Mm,
and
that's right.
Flowers from the, they call it the umbelliferous family, like carrots and parsley.
Oh, the ones with the sort of almost like tiny, almost like lace-like flowers. They go for those, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, I suppose it would make sense, wouldn't it? Like nice little fine parts for their legs to sort of rummage
course,
in amongst.
And, of course, native, think about Manuka.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, which is, of course, what you were talking earlier about, the Manuka honey. That's and the bees seem to really go for it, don't they?
Yeah, and the kind of honey produced from that is just, I think it's the best tasting one.
Oh, it is,
and
yeah.
The market for that is huge now.
Yeah, and I would say there is a difference between organic honey and inorganic. Because obviously plants that are sprayed and things like that, it's no longer organic. Mm-hmm. And tea tree or the Manuka plant is so that you don't spray those.
No.
They're like usually found
in the wild.
Up high, 5 meter high tree.
Yeah.
So you can be guaranteed that, I reckon, that the honey's pretty toxin free.
Pretty natural.
Mm.
And also with your wildflower areas, so don't completely mow your lawn, leave it to flower a bit.
Mm.
And there are people who love bees that are campaigning to have these wildlife corridors along the roadside.
Oh, great.
Just to get
I've got a few neighbours that have got that. They just don't know. Yeah, they're bee supporters.
They could be. Join the club.
Oh, woo, love it. Throw away the lawnmower.
Yeah. So you don't actually have to be special about planting. You can just let...
Just let nature be.
Let nature be.
Yes. Oh, there's nothing nicer than a wildflower too, eh? Beautiful.
With the bumblebees, do you know, Karen, that you can hire or you can buy these hives? For the home gardener, they're not too, like, onerous to look after.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going for the honeybee, yes, you need to register and maybe do a few courses
to
be qualified to look after them.
The rule is any beehive box or house must be an approved method to keep bees in. Reason being, they need to be able to inspect them, and I'm not sure if you mentioned this, for the diseases that are killing our bees.
Exactly.
The AFB, American Foul Brood, and the Varroa mites. So they need to be able to lift out, clearly see the health of the hive.
Yep.
It's
come under regulations now.
Yeah.
So I found that, according to the New Zealand Beekeepers Association, there are 779,758 registered beehives in New Zealand.
Wow, that's quite astounding.
That is quite a number.
Wow. Yeah, well, and that's great, but if they're not well tended and they're full of mites,
it can be a bit disastrous.
It's more problematic than beneficial, yeah.
And because bees, yes, they need food, but if they can't find any, they might go and steal from another hive.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they can be a bit sneaky that way.
Oh.
So that's why they need their space and their bit of patch of
food. Oh, well,
food.
They need to watch out for them on Police 107 then. Which local hive is being?
Okay, to find out more about bees, so if you're not, you don't keep any yourself, you can join a local bee club.
Right, I think that would be a wise idea. Yeah, especially, I think there's things you certainly need to know, and it's always good to have an expert to chat with on those topics, so yeah.
So I found one that's quite close to here, Karen, the Auckland Beekeepers Club.
Mm-hmm.
In the Unitec grounds.
Oh,
so,
right,
yeah.
Right here, right next to Planet FM, people.
Yeah. So just Google them and find out more about that.
Oh, great. Yeah, would definitely recommend you do that if you're looking into beekeeping, for sure.
Or just grow more flowers.
Easy peasy, yeah, absolutely. Don't mow your lawn.
All right, gardeners, that's all we have time for, but we'll be back next week with more tips and advice.
All right.
Happy gardening, everyone.
See you later, everyone.
See ya.